And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
Before I start the podcast today, I have a confession to make. The confession is I just gave up coffee, and today is the second day. So I have gone, when I get up around 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, but an average of about 4. By 9 o'clock a.m., I have finished about 8 cups of coffee. So I've given that up. And yes, I'm drinking some green tea, but not nearly enough. And so I am definitely recording this podcast with a handicap. But it is a podcast that I'm very excited about because it is a topic about which I probably get as much mail as most of the topics that people are focused on. And in fact, I was going to make it one of a number of 10 Q&As to do, but when I got into it, I decided, no, this is a topic that deserves an entire podcast. And this is about the question, what's the best balanced fund? And typically the question comes, what's the best Vanguard balanced fund? I think people are assuming that Vanguard is going to have lower expenses. And while this podcast is not about a comparison with Vanguard and Fidelity or Vanguard and others, it is the fact that Vanguard has this reputation for low expenses that I think people gravitate there with the idea of using balanced funds. And I want to talk about the pros and cons of the balanced fund, and what are they? Because they aren't one kind of fund. There are many different balanced funds to choose from, even at Vanguard. That's what made me realize this was more than a quick answer and needed to be dug into deeper to make sure that people who were thinking about a balanced fund select the right kind. Now, the advantages are pretty obvious. Wouldn't it be nice if you could invest in one fund for the rest of your life? Well, in a sense, you can. And that would be a target date fund, because that target date fund is going to adjust the balance of equity and fixed income over your lifetime. So you virtually could start with a balanced fund at age 21 at Vanguard or many other companies, and it could be set up to with the idea that you're going to retire in 40 or 45 years, whatever it might be. And you would start out with a balance in most funds of 10% fixed income and 90% equities. And then by the time you're 65, you'll probably have around 60% equities and 40% fixed income, or you might even be in a target date fund that is 45% equities at age 65. There can be quite a variety, quite a range. But those are balanced funds. And not only are they balanced in regards to how much in equity and how much in fixed income, but they're also balanced in terms of how much in U.S., how much in international, how much in small, how much in large, how much in growth, how much in value. They may not talk about it that way, but every one of those asset classes is considered to be in the portfolio, or it's a decision if you keep it out. So target date funds represent, at this point, probably, well, for sure, the most popular balanced fund in America. Now, most of you who are writing, I think you're writing about the more traditional balanced fund that may be 40% in equity and 60% in fixed income, or 60% in equity and 40% in fixed income. Those are also balanced funds. But when you buy the traditional balanced fund we think of it being a static asset allocation. Now, in some cases, as you'll find out in a few minutes here, there may be a range of equities that the managers will want to use in equities as well as fixed income. So there are a lot of things happening here. You got how much in equities, how much in fixed income in your balanced fund. You've got how much in high-quality bonds, high-yield bonds, how much in high-quality stocks, riskier stocks, U.S. stocks, international. It's a long list. And we'd like it to be so simple as to simply have somebody say, Paul, what's the lowest cost balanced fund? That's the one I want, they'll say. But that doesn't mean it's the right kind for you. Obviously, I wouldn't be recommending a 60-40, 60 equity, 40 fixed income. That's the first balanced fund I'm going to talk about. But I wouldn't be recommending that for a 21-year-old. And I'm not so sure that I'd recommend it for a lot of 65-year-olds because it may be too risky. And we're going to talk about how you can tell how risky your balanced fund is going to be. So the greater the simplicity with investing, the higher the probability of success. Now, that's not going to apply to all people, but I think it applies to most people. Most people would truly like to set it and forget it. I don't know how many people watch CNBC every day or read the Wall Street Journal to look for stock ideas, investing ideas, or go to AAII, American Association of Individual Investors. I'm in a population area here in the Pacific Northwest of well over 1 million people. Maybe it's 2 million people in the area. And when there's a big turnout for their sometimes well-known speakers from Morningstar or people who are high up in the mutual fund industry, they come to these meetings and maybe they'll address 100 people, maybe they'll address 200 people. And I think most of the rest of the world says, who would want to spend Saturday morning doing that? And those are typically the people that would probably like to find a one-fund solution. In fact, wouldn't they like a one-fund solution that they didn't have to decide to hire or fire another manager for the rest of their life? Of course, they'd like to be in a one-fund solution that would perform well. And I'll talk about that a little because I think there are some things we can know about we do know about historical performance. And we always have to be careful to state that past performance is not a guaranteed indication of the future. It is an indication of the future because there's a whole bunch of it that leads us to certain conclusions. And those conclusions don't tell you you're going to make 10% in the S&P 500, but the conclusion would be you're going to make more in stocks than you're going to make in bonds for the rest of your life. We just don't know how much that will be. In fact, it could be 2% for bonds and 5% for stocks. But yes, I think most people want a simple one decision fund. Now, in the coming months, I'll be arguing aggressively for making it a two-fund solution. In fact, there's a new book by the Bogleheads. I just got it in the mail. And if I hadn't been working on this podcast, I would have been reading that book, but it's about a three-fund solution. But I think most of you, particularly those of you who would like to basically set it and forget it, you probably don't need any more than two funds. But for those of you who are looking for one fund, there are balanced funds you could buy, invest in. So you have this simplicity. Then, of course, you're going to demand low cost, aren't you? Of course. And then you may be in a balanced fund that doesn't have all the asset classes you'd like to have. I mentioned target date funds a minute ago, and I think this would go for the traditional balanced funds as well. When I was back meeting with John Bogle and we were talking about how a target date fund is built, and I would assume you could say the same thing about a traditional balanced fund, it's mostly put together of traditionally acceptable asset classes, large cap growth and value, mostly U.S., very little small cap exposure, and almost no small cap value exposure. So you've got to realize that any balanced fund is a compromise. Because the people who are putting those together, they're not thinking about you. They don't know your desire to take risk. They don't know your risk tolerance. And so their answer is based for a million people. Literally a million. In fact, millions of people. And they want to make it something that almost all of those people could believe and rely on for the future. Don't want to be too much different than what they see on the nightly news. The Dow was up or the S&P was up or down. No, you want your returns to be similar to that stuff they see on the TV set. When I think most of you know that some of the better returns come from things that are not on the screen at night because they're asset classes that aren't represented in the S&P 500 nor the Dow Jones. But being average is not a sin when it comes to what we know about the past. And by the way, I do not mean the average of the average money manager or the average mutual fund manager, because their average is way lower on average than the return of the indexes, the benchmarks. They are a whole different kind of average. And so I want to make sure that your goal is not to be the average based on all mutual funds. I want yours to be as close to the benchmark, the index, as possible. Now, I've been advocating for balanced portfolios for a long time, decades. Balanced portfolios of a certain amount of stock, equities, and fixed income, bonds, and trying to get a mix of asset classes. Those of you who by chance have not read The Ultimate Buy and Hold Portfolio, I hope you will go to paulmerriman.com and then you'll see Best Advice, and there's a drop down box there under Best Advice, and there's The Ultimate Buy and Hold Portfolio article along with many, many tables. And that particular strategy is first focused on the right combination of equities. And then we do another table about how much you should have in fixed income. And when we're done with this exercise, We've put together a balanced portfolio that addresses your tolerance for risk and the return you'd like to achieve. And of course, not expecting you're going to get the same return as is on the table, because it could be lower. Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. So I'm a great believer in balanced portfolios. When it starts to, and I should note that you could have a whole range in a room full of people I might be speaking with. There could be some who would be 40-60, 40 equities, 60% bonds. Others that are 80-20, 80 equities, 20% bonds. Some 100% in equities. And then, of course, it's which equities. But the bottom line is, every time somebody picks one of those combinations, there is the balanced portfolio. The weakness, if there is one in that, is that people have to go to either an ETF supplier or a place to get mutual funds, and they're going to put together a portfolio of 10% of this and 10% of that and 5% of this and 18% of that. And then periodically they're going to rebalance. Oh my God, am I afraid of the rebalancing process? How will I ever figure that out? Well, when you buy a balanced fund, all those things are done for you inside. Everything is preordained. The only thing that's not preordained is the outcome of whatever combination you signed up for. But there are some very different approaches to having a balanced fund. And when somebody asks me which is the best Vanguard balanced fund, my view of my answer there would probably be very similar to the answer I would give to somebody who asked me about Fidelity. It's just that Vanguard has lower expenses in most cases with balanced funds. I think there are some reasons. I can't always explain why. Part of it is expenses, but better returns at Vanguard. Again, the past. So let me start. And one more thing. For those of you who are looking for a very simple solution, maybe you're even interested in my ultimate buy and hold strategy with a simple solution, I can promise you that in the coming months, I am going to spend more time on trying to figure out how to make this simple for all of you to apply. And that's not as easy as it looks. But Chris Pederson and Daryl Balls and myself and a few others who are, I think, champion the work that we are doing, our biggest goal right now is to find you an answer for the long term that means you never have to own more than two mutual funds. And believe me when I tell you, I am not going into the mutual fund business to run a fund myself. I want you to be able to do this at a Vanguard or Fidelity or T. Rowe Price. Stay tuned for that. Now, let's go back to the traditional balanced funds. I want to talk about the fund that is so commonly mentioned at Vanguard because it has the word balanced in the title of the fund, the name. And it is just simply the Vanguard Balanced Fund. And of course, here come the numbers. And I've had a lot of feedback that many of you liked the use of a video when there are so many numbers involved. And I was also told by a number of people, don't quit your day job to do videos. That they want me to keep doing the podcast because they think I'm probably better at that than I am at the videos. But I will get better, and we will figure out how to make them more interesting. but with the Balanced Index Fund. By the way, a five-star fund. And many of the these kinds of funds, like the target date funds at Vanguard, are given five-star ratings. Now remember, I hope you've heard me say it before, I know others have, and that is the star rating is overrated. But in this particular case, there are some reasons that I think they've earned their keep. This is a 60-40 portfolio, 60% in equities, 40% in fixed income. Now, I'm going to jump to the return over this period of time. I'm looking at a 15-year period through the day I'm recording this. It gives me numbers through the end of July 30th. But the compound rate of return for 15 years was 7.6%. Now, I know a lot of people in retirement that would be happy to get 7.6% for the rest of their life, of course, depending upon how much risk that they had to take to get it. But this is 60% equity, 40% fixed income. It's all U.S. equity. Now, that's important. That's important because U.S. equity has been far better than international equity over the last 15 years. So that's been an advantage. We know it's also an advantage that the Balanced Index Fund at Vanguard has low expenses of 0.19. I also know that in the balance of equities, that it's about a 50-50 mix with growth and value. Now, that's an important aspect of this return that we have to think in terms of, because we would normally expect value to have produced a better return than growth, but it's been a good period for growth. So if we get into a more normal market, this fund may be outproduced by those funds that have more value. And in fact, Vanguard has some balanced funds that do have more value. And as I mentioned earlier, in most of these balanced funds, they don't have exposure to a lot of small cap. In the case of this fund at Vanguard, it has 47% of the equities are in giant companies, 30% in large companies, 17% in mid caps, 6% in small caps, and only 2%, one third of that, is in small cap value. So for those of you who know of my long-term affection for small-cap value, you can see why it would make me hopeful that a person could make more money as if they found a balanced index portfolio that had more small-cap value. But it did have a good return, and it has a huge diversification under that umbrella, 1,500 different stocks and 9,800 different bonds. Now that is a lot of diversification. Then in the early 90s, Vanguard came out with a different approach to the balanced funds. And these were life strategy funds. And these came in three sizes, still do. One is really aimed at a mostly bond fixed income portfolio. A second is mostly equity. The third is almost all equity. And as you will see, the returns are going to reflect the level of equity positions that each might have. But then you could decide for the rest of your life if you wanted. In fact, you could decide as a 20-year-old to be in the Life Strategy Growth Fund. And then when you turn 50, you could move to the Life Strategy Moderate Growth Fund. And then when you turn 65, you could turn to the Life Strategy Income. Now, income does not mean that it's all in bonds. As a matter of fact, it is about 35 to 40% in equities and the balance in bonds. Now, it is, as the earlier fund, it has no particular tilt to value. The equity portion is almost 50-50 growth and value. All three of these funds have low expenses, and as you add a little more equity to each one, it increases the expenses by 0.01%. So for the income strategy, it's 0.12%. For the moderate growth, it's 0.13%, and it's 0.14% for the growth. Now, what we know is that the bonds have not been all that productive over the last 15 years, and this is a portfolio that has about 60% of the equities in U.S. and about 40% of the equities in internationals, and internationals underperform the U.S., so the compound rate of return for the 15 years for this conservative strategy was a 5.8% a year. By the way, there we do have the category average was 5.5%. So there was a slight advantage, and I'll bet you'd find that advantage came from the lower expenses. Now, note what happens when you go to the next level up. You go from 40% equities to 60% equities. Now, it turns out the underlying holdings are almost exactly the same, but it's more equities. And since equities did better than bonds in that period, you would expect the 60-40 through the Life Strategy Moderate Growth to have a higher return, and it did. Instead of 5.8, it was 6.9. And by the way, the average for that category was 6.8. Now, one of the reasons that I think you'll find that Vanguard is not going to have a huge advantage through other compared to other balanced funds. One, it may be that they have less value. And the second is, once you get into these funds that are built, in theory, for a huge group of people who basically are not trying to get higher rates of return, they're more conservative. And typically, the more conservative, the bigger the equities, the lower the expenses of running those funds. But the returns were very similar. And I am sure that part of that, too, was that there was a fair amount of internationals in these balanced funds, and a lot of other balanced funds don't have as much in internationals. Then, of course, there's the aggressive one, which would make me think it would be all equities, but no, it isn't all equities. It's about 80% equities, 20% growth. The same 50-50 balance between growth and the value. Virtually everything is exactly the same. By the way, the price to book is about 2.1 for all three of these life strategy funds, and that applies to the equity portion of the portfolio. So it's not entirely devoid of value, but it doesn't have a whole bunch. Anyway, what we would expect by adding more equity to the portfolio is the return would go up, and it did to 7.7%. So you went from 5.8 to 6.9 to 7.7 because you took more risk. And the average category return in that life strategy growth arena was 7.4. So in each case, the same equities, it's just a question of how much you have in equities. You have to determine how much you want to have in U.S. and international equities. And by the way, you're not going to get a balanced fund that may have exactly what you want, but you should come to this decision with some sort of a wish list, in the hopes that you get the best unit of return per unit of risk. There's very little market timing going on inside of these funds, but they can from time to time have slightly more equity, slightly less equity. That would probably be determined by some committee that saw the economy and the market going a certain way, but they're not going to be very far off of that definition of the income strategy and the moderate growth strategy and the growth strategy. Now, the final major category of balanced funds that you can use at Vanguard are the target date funds. They are certainly a true balanced fund. Now, remember, in the case of what was the original balanced fund in the Vanguard family, that's just basically 60-40. Then you had this choice in the early 90s between from very conservative to moderate to relatively aggressive portfolios that you could hold for a lifetime. If you decided to become more conservative, you needed to move out of one fund and move into another, and you had to take that responsibility for making that decision. And then 2000, early 2000 decade, the target date fund became a new instrument, a popular instrument for investors who wanted a one decision investment and not have to decide when it's time to go from the aggressive to the moderate to the conservative. And target date funds have really taken over this industry. I suspect that within another decade, 20 years at the most, over 95% of all investments for retirement will be in target date portfolios. And you'll have a lot of choices for how aggressive or conservative you want to be. And it is in that particular area that I want to focus. If people are going to make a decision for life and buy a fund that they're going to have inside of a 401k or an IRA, I want to make sure that you are in the best one. And I want to make sure that if there's anything else you can do, if there's one more small step you can take, that will give you a premium retirement, and I mean that, a substantially higher return, or not even substantial, let's just call it a higher return with very, very little additional risk. And we'll be talking a lot about that before the end of the year. But target date funds, as you know, they depends on when people are retiring. Those retiring in 2020 have one fund. Those retiring in 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, 65, all the way out to 65, you can invest in a balanced fund that is today balanced with the understanding that you're going to retire in 2025 or 2030. And so some very smart people, in fact, in some ways, I think even smarter than the people who ran or do run pension funds. These are likely, in many ways, the cream of the crop because they're making decisions for millions and millions of people. And companies may come and go, and I'm talking about public companies, but these target date funds are going to be around forever. So, what do we know about a target date fund that makes it different from the life strategy fund? Well, we know that the professionals who run it are going to make the changes as you grow older. And what you want, of course, is somebody who, when you're young, gives you exposure to equities, and when you're older, give you exposure to less equities, and you want the expenses to be low. So I just looked at one of the many target date funds at Vanguard, the 2025 target date fund. It has an entire internal expense of 0.13. So that's an unbelievable charge. I can tell you that many of the pension funds are paying way more than that to have money managed for the pensions. So I think that those are grand bargains at Vanguard. The problem I have in trying to help you compare apples to apples is that, for one thing, you really can't compare a target date fund to a 60-40 portfolio, that balanced fund, nor can you compare it to the life strategy returns, because over every period, it's going to depend on whether you got a lot of bonds or a little bonds. What I do know at Vanguard is that regardless if you're going to retire in 5 years or 40 years, you are going to get an equity position that looks the same in terms of the asset classes. So everybody's going to get a certain amount of equities in U.S. and a certain amount of equities in internationals. And when you're 20 years old, you're going to get a lot more equities than when you're 65. But the equities you get are going to be the same. And of course, as many of you know, again, my complaint is that young people, number one, shouldn't have any bonds in their portfolio, and Vanguard has 10%. And number two, a young person should have more small cap. And certainly, if they're going to have small cap, I think it should be small cap value. So there's a whole bunch of balanced funds you have to pick from. So now the person who asks the question, how much, what balanced fund is the best at Vanguard? Well, it depends on whether you want to have it managed in the future for risk or not, whether you're going to take the responsibility or not. And then you can pick from those life strategies, in which case, from time to time, if you've got a strategy, you're going to be changing from fund to fund. And for the people who just want a traditional, old, balanced fund, all U.S., there's the key with their balanced index fund. It does not have any internationals. Now, they do have another fund that I will mention. By the way, I was going to note that the reason I picked that 2025 fund was because it has a 60% equity, 40% bond return. The problem is it doesn't have a 15-year track record, almost, but not yet. So I just for the fun of it looked at the last 10 years, because it does have a 10-year track record. But remember, in one case, there would be a changing equity position, adding more and more fixed income along the way. But here's what I know about the last 10 years. The target date fund compounded at 6.9. The bond index compounded at the balanced index The basic all U.S. compounded at 8. Now see, there's that advantage of not having the internationals over that period of time. Now, we're not done yet. We still got some more balanced funds at Vanguard that you need to consider. And a couple that have been, I think, winners for me over the years, because they are two funds that I've recommended to a lot of people who want almost nothing to do with their investments, but they don't want to have a stockbroker. There is a fund at Vanguard called the STAR, S-T-A-R fund. And the STAR fund has actually had a good performance, 7.8% over the 15-year period. It, too, is a 60% equity portfolio. It has a whole bunch of actively managed funds in it that are some of the better performing funds, equity funds at Vanguard. The expense ratio is higher, 0.32. It does have some internationals. About a third of their equity position is in internationals, two-thirds in the U.S., and a slight tilt to growth as opposed to the next couple of funds I'm going to talk about have a tilt to value. But Star Fund has been a good performer. And as with the target date funds, has a low minimum. I think they're all, those are $1,000 to get into. Others, most of these are $3,000. And by the way, I haven't taken the time to make the differences between the Admiral and the investor shares. You can get even lower expenses on many of these funds than what I have mentioned, as I have quoted you the investor share rate, and once you get up to $10,000, those rates go down. And in a minute, I'll tell you about some new balanced funds that Vanguard recently introduced. But before I do, I do want to talk about two funds that I have for many years. I've been around the investment advisory end of the industry since 1983, and prior to that was involved in other parts of the business. And as some of you know, I even was a stockbroker for a couple of years back in the 60s. But two funds that have been around for a long time and have a terrific long-term track record are worth mentioning, because they are also balanced funds, actively managed balanced funds. One is Wellesley, and that is a company that came out, a fund that came out in 1970. That's actually before John Bogle was running the company, I believe. But that's a 40-60, 40% equity, 60% fixed income. It has had over the last 15 years a 7% compound rate of return. Now, let's see. I think we had another fund that had been around with a 40-60. That would be the Life Strategy Index. And that one had compounded at 5.8. So this one has performed better. Part of that is because there wasn't any international, I don't think, in the portfolio. And secondarily, I think it's a leaning to more value at the Wellesley Fund. And the other thing that's different is both Wellesley and Wellington have a relatively low diversification number. In the case of Wellesley, 73 companies. They're large companies, big companies. I think you would recognize almost all of them. And they have some 1,130 bonds. Wellington, on the other hand, is 60-40, basically. Again, there can be small changes around either above or below that 60% equity, but not very much. And that one, and this is an estimate because Morningstar does not have this updated through the date that all of these others were updated, but about an 8%, about 1% better than the Wellesley because it's 60-40. In many cases over the years, and the expense ratio for Wellington is 0.25 and for Wellesley 0.22. The way I've used with people who don't want to be involved in the process, they just would like somebody else to do it, and they don't want a broker calling with any hot ideas. They just want to know that their money is being conservatively managed. And so for many of those folks, I have recommended a combination of 50% in Wellington and 50% in Wellesley. And what do you end up when you do that? You have basically 50% in equities and 50% in fixed income. It's not the same portfolios in each of these cases, so you do get some more diversification. So that would suggest that the compound rate of return of a 50-50 strategy over this 15-year period through almost the end of July, July 30th, would have been about a 7.5% compound rate of return. Now, there's not one of these balanced portfolios that's is probably having you rush to the phone to be sure you get into this as soon as possible, because these were not life-changing in the way that people who watch CNBC think of life-changing or subscribe to these letters that promise 1,000% returns. But for people who want a conservative investment, I think these are good choices. Now, the thing that you are going to have to do is you're going to have to figure out whether you should be in the 40-60, 60-40, 50-50 for this particular part of your portfolio. You may not be using this for your whole portfolio. You may only be using it for parts. So you still have to ask yourself where it fits in your portfolio, how it would change your portfolio in terms of how much you have in equities and how much you have in fixed income, because that's going to change your risk exposure. But if this is the only fund that you have in your portfolio and you choose one of these funds that are 40% equity, 60% fixed income, then from what I know about the period from 1970 through 2017, that's in the fine-tuning table that you can get. In fact, we had a link in the description of the podcast, but I would see there that the worst 12 months for a 40% equity portfolio using the S&P 500 for the underlying asset class, the worst 12 months was a loss of 18.5%. And that's over 48 years. I have no reason to believe that you won't lose that much at some point in the next 48 years. The 60-40 was a loss, a worst-case loss of 27.6. And for the 50-50, the worst-case loss was a loss of 18.5. And let me talk about three calendar years that were really tough. These are not the worst 12 months, but this is the worst calendar years that investors had to live through over the last 48 years. In 1973, while the S&P 500 was down 14.7%, a 40% equity, 60% fixed income was down 3.4%. A 50-50 was down 5.3%, and a 60-40 was down 7.3%. Then, 1974, another bad year, down 26.5% for the S&P 500. The 40-60 down 6.9%. The 50-50 down 10.4%, and the 60-40 down 13.8%. And then the one that so many of us lived through, 2008, the 40-60, this is the S&P 500 and a five-year T-note, the 40-60 was down 12.2%, the 50-50 down 16.8%, and the 60% down 21.2%. Now, that was the worst year. Now, that's just with the S&P 500, and it's interesting to note, you know, how valid is it to look at the S&P 500 and think we have any sense of what the risk might be? Well, let's see how Wellington and Wellesley did in 2008, since that was the biggie. Remember, for the 60-40, 60 equity, 40 bonds, that would be the Wellington. It lost in 2008 22.3%, compared to the S&P, according to our table, lost 21.2%. So that was pretty close. And in the case of Wellesley, 40% equity, 60% fixed income, the S&P had fallen 12.2%, but Wellesley was down 9.8%, so it did a little better than the S&P 500. I do think that table is valuable in terms of getting some sense of what you're going to have to face with making a choice about how much risk you're willing to take. So that's a lot of numbers, and I'm sorry about that, but choosing the best balanced fund, as we see, is a combination of what your needs are, what your risk tolerance are, that's needs for return, and what it takes to give you peace of mind. I think for people who don't want to face the possibilities of small cap value going down, even though they can face the possibilities of large companies going down, I think some of these funds, whether it's the grand old balanced, Vanguard Balanced Fund, is certainly a good fund. I think for people who like the idea of seeing a track record in theory that goes back to 1928 or 1929, the Wellington and I think Wellesley starts in 1970. These are funds that have been around for a long time, using, I think, a very similar discipline for that, for most of that period of time. Big companies, well diversified, not massively diversified like you get in an index fund. But for those of you who really want somebody not only to give you the best balance of equities and fixed income at this point in your life, but for what they should be later in your life, and you don't want to keep going back and asking that question, what should I do next? A target date fund is a powerful, powerful investment. And hope you'll look at that as a balanced fund, just as you would the other balanced funds that I've just discussed. I hope that answers some of those questions. And again, I'm going to be talking a lot more about simple solutions for investors in the coming months, and I'll hope that you share some of this information with others that you think need a little push in the right direction. Thanks for listening.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.